Our scripture reading comes from Psalm 78. Listen, my people, to my teaching. Tilt your ears toward the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth with a proverb. I'll declare riddles from days long gone, ones that our ancestors told us. We won't hide them from our descendants. We'll tell the next generation all about the praise due to God and God's strength, the wonderful works God has done. God established a law for Jacob and set up instruction for Israel, ordering our ancestors to teach them to their children. This is so that the next generation and children not yet born will know these things. And so they can rise up and tell their children to put their hope in God, never forgetting God's deeds, but keeping God's commandments. And so that they won't become like their ancestors, a rebellious and stubborn generation, a generation whose heart wasn't set firm and whose spirit wasn't faithful to God.
The hearts of our ancestors were not filled with love. They were not true to the covenant. Still, the Most High, being compassionate, forgave their iniquity and gave them new life. How patient was the eternal lover? How blind to their fickle hearts?
Thank you, Larry and Judy. I feel at times that when I listen to the two of you reading the scriptures, there's really no need for any preaching afterwards. You bring the scriptures alive in such a wonderful way. Thank you. Small world, Larry and I just discovered, I was talking to him yesterday and said, you know, your accent doesn't really sound like someone from New Jersey. And it turned out that he spent quite a few years in Montgomery, Alabama. And as I've shared with you all, I spent a year in Montgomery, Alabama. And it turns out we were there at the same time. And it turns out that he and my brother would have been going to the same high school together as well. So what a very small world that some 55 years or so later, we reconnect here over Zoom with one another. So thank you, Larry and Judy, for sharing the scriptures with us. You know, we are now, as I mentioned just a bit ago, we are 6 months and counting into this pandemic moment in our shared history. And there is, if you're paying attention and you're listening to the news and you're reading the papers and everything, there is an emerging narrative that is coming out, that is beginning to form, that is centered on the way things used to be. It's a narrative at times that sounds to me somewhat like the narrative of what we once created for the 50s, that the 50s were this ideal moment in our history. And somehow that narrative that is emerging right now of the way things used to be pre-pandemic is told to us theoretically so we know what it is that we want to get back to, what the normal is that we want to get back to. And invariably, that picture that is emerging of the way things used to be is a very rosy picture. It's a picture in which we apparently had a very vibrant economy. We had healthy communities. We had limitless opportunities. We had the ability to travel anywhere and anytime. It is the normal that seems to be the gold standard that so many folks who are in leadership positions are shooting for. Of course, the story of the way things used to be differs a lot by who is telling the story. For instance, if you are a Black person in the United States, the way things used to be isn't so pretty, even as much as it isn't so pretty the way things are right now. The way things used to be, which is still the way things are right now, is that if you are a Black person in the United States, you are more than twice as likely to be poor or unemployed than a white person. A white person in the United States has, on average, the personal wealth 13 times the amount of a Black person's personal wealth. Even with college degrees, seeing education as the great equalizer, a white person with the same degree on average will earn 20 to 25% more income for the same job than a Black person will. And when you add all this up and you factor in the fact that social services that local governments provide are mostly determined by tax revenue of the zip code, then it means that the health and well-being and education of our most vulnerable parts of our community are grossly underfunded in the way things used to be. If you were a tree, a mountain, a river, a shoreline, a coral reef, a plant, one of our animal kin, the way things used to be puts you on the brink of elimination and extinction. Your existence as a place of habitation of the divine has been denigrated to that of just being a resource whose only value is economic and primarily the economic benefit for a very few. And if you happen to be an island community that put all of its eggs in the basket of tourism for the most part, the way things used to be is utterly unsustainable. In order to support an extra 250,000 people here a day, that's what the average number of tourists was in Hawaii in the year 2019, an extra 250,000 people, which means one out of every seven people in Hawaii is a person who has come here as a visitor, who is not at all invested in the long-term sustainability concerns of these islands. In fact, the reason that they have come that has been marketed to them is that they can escape those concerns and come to a place like this. In order to support those 250,000 people, we create a very low wage economy in the place that has the highest cost of living. We are told that two people working full time in order to support a family of four, both people would need to be making an average of $22 and change an hour just to be able to make ends meet safely and sustainably. And yet most jobs in Hawaii, the most average jobs in Hawaii that people have an average hourly pay of $13 an hour. That is a $9 an hour difference. And what that means is that 42% of the families here in Hawaii are what are known as ALICE families, asset limited, income constrained, and yet employed. 42% of the families in Hawaii, that is 190,000 of Hawaii's 450,000 families, are constrained and are having a hard time making ends meet, and three-fourths of them, one financial hardship introduced into their life, and they would in all likelihood become homeless. And not to mention, if you're an endangered species, flora, or fauna, Hawaii is the last place that you want to be, because this is where more endangered species, flora, and fauna end up going extinct. Sadly, the truth of the world pre-pandemic is what it was often dominated by: people and corporations and nations who hold the positions and the possessions, who hold the power and the purse strings, whose interests were not centered at all in what is best for all, whose interests are not in what is best for the planet, whose interests are not what is good for neighbor and community. The story of the way things used to be is a story of a world that was all too often centered on self-interest. And if those who control the narrative then can control the narrative now, those who control the story then that said this is the world in which we came from and can control that story now, then the life that they have, the good life that they have, can continue unabated. Whereas for everyone else who are experiencing a very different story, their life begins to struggle even more. If we keep telling ourselves a sanitized and erroneous story of how things were so that our future can be more reflective of the past, then we are going to keep perpetuating a culture in which love is not at its center. If we are willing to tell a story, on the other hand, with all of its warts and wrinkles, that is what becomes essential to building a new and different future. And that, my friends, is what Psalm 78 is all about. Excuse me just a minute.
Naya, can you get me one of those ginger chews or something? Thanks so much.
Somehow I have a tickle in my throat. My apologies. Excuse me. Psalm 78 is the second longest psalm in the book of Psalms. Of 150 psalms, there's only one, 119, Psalm 119, that is longer. In Psalm 78, of which Judy and Larry read for us just 10 verses of, there are 60 plus other verses that are there. Psalm 78 retells much of the history of God's chosen people. And it tells it from a clear understanding that such people, God's chosen people, are far from perfect. The story they tell is not a sanitized history. This is not the story of those who are in power would want told. Instead, what the psalmist says is, listen, my people. And the verses that Judy read for us, listen, my people, listen to the stories of our past. Listen, not just to the stories that you've heard of our ancestors, but listen to that which has not been told you. The history has not been all that glorious, the psalmist lets us know, for us, the chosen ones. We have been a rebellious and stubborn people. Our people's hearts have not been firmly set on God. Our spirits have not been faithful to God. And the 60 verses that we mercifully did not read for you all today, they detail the failures of a people to live up to their ideals. When God leads them to liberation, they grumble. When God provides them food from nowhere, they complain about it. When they are thirsty and God provides water, they conveniently forget this truth. When God gave them the law to guide their actions, they went their own way. When God brings them into the promised land, they fail to live as kind and compassionate and loving people. Their hearts, we are told, were not filled with love, the psalmist says. They were not true to the covenant. That is their story. That is not the sanitized version of the story that says how wonderful they are as a people. That is the story of who they are. And the psalmist does not tell this story because the psalmist has an axe to grind, not because the psalmist is carrying a grudge. It is because they want their people, the people whom God has chosen, to be all that God has called them to be. And you can't get there without also seeing where you have fallen short. You can't get to be the people that God wants you to be unless you can honestly acknowledge where it is that you have fallen short. And if they are to be the people that God would call them to be, a people that we read at other times that is to be a light unto all nations, the community from whom all shall be blessed, to be a house of prayer for the world, to be a people who is defined by those words of Micah 6:8, to a people of justice, a people of loving kindness, and a people that walk humbly before God, then they need to be able to admit where they have gone astray if they are ever going to find their way back to the path that was always theirs to be on. There is a similar reality that we know is happening within our own nation right now. A year ago, the New York Times created a series that has found its way into school curriculums and other platforms. It's called the 1619 Project. It's a re-examination of our nation's history by recognizing, as they say, the early foundational reliance on slave labor and the long-time disenfranchisement and systemic racism against racial minorities. It's a mouthful. Early foundational reliance on slave labor and the long-time disenfranchisement and systemic racism against racial minorities. It places front and center the 1619 Project, the consequences of slavery, and the many ways in which disenfranchisement has been carried out through legal means since the end of legalized slavery. And it does so while also celebrating the contributions of Black Americans to our nation's story, often despite the challenges placed upon them. And again, such efforts, just like the efforts of the psalmist in Psalm 78, are not put forth because someone has an axe to grind or someone has a grudge to hold. It is to help us as a nation to live up to the very ideals that were birthed into the world centuries ago. Now, of course, if you have benefited from that enslavement, from that systemic oppression, if you continue to benefit from that systemic oppression, or if you don't, or if you know that you will benefit in the future from it, or you think that maybe somehow you could get a benefit, because I see others out there who think that way, then you are probably going to not want this story to be told. The story that emerges from Things like the 1619 Project will not only be hard to hear, but you will do everything you can to discredit it and refute it because it makes life uncomfortable. And the conflict of whose story we are going to hear in our nation is playing itself out right now in our streets, in our politics, and I would say even in how we define what the normal is that we want to see emerge over the next months of persevering through a pandemic and creating our new tomorrow. What is the story that we will tell? What is the story we are willing to hear as we allow ourselves to shape that future? And the psalmist is very clear. It is not only about the stories we tell and the stories we hear, it is also the stories that we are willing to live out. Ultimately, Psalm 78 is not just about making sure we know where we have fallen short, but Psalm 78 is about as well as making sure that we understand that at the center of this story, at the center of our story is simply how we shall respond to the divine that is in our lives. Central to Psalm 78, in verse 38, as Larry read for us there, it says it all. Our God is a God of compassion, a God of forgiveness, a God of patience. John the Evangelist, writing centuries later, put it a different way, but said more or less the same when he simply said in three words, God is love. In the covenant that exists between God and the chosen people, the covenant that exists between God and the world, only one partner in that covenant has been consistent to their end of the bargain, and that is God. For at the core of who God is, then, now, and forever, is love. And at the core of who we are called to be, is to be that very living image of love in this world, to love our neighbors as ourselves, to love God with our whole heart, soul, spirit, body, and mind. To be true to this covenant is what the psalmist is ultimately calling us to do. And so we tell our stories honestly. We look at where we have stumbled, but we use those times to recognize where we have stumbled so that we are able to recognize how to get back on the right path and how to center ourselves in that love, which is the very reflection of God, who is our partner in this covenant. And so we are called right now in 2020, in the midst of a pandemic, to be true to that covenant in a variety of ways. At the systemic level, because we are all part of a larger community, we are part of a nation. At the systemic level, we are true to that covenant when we live out the things that we are called to do as members of this community. And one of those is to vote. In 37 days, we will be invited to have, we will be allowed to vote. Some of us will be voting long before that with mail-in ballots. We will be called on to vote. That is part of the way in which we live out what it means to be a people of love. Right here in front of me, in this Zoom call, in this worship, are those of you that are in decision-making positions. Some of you are elected officials. Some of you are leaders of industry. Some of you are respected thought leaders and action leaders in the community. We who have those kinds of positions are called to live into those positions, guided by that very spirit of love that we are called to in covenant. For those of us that are not necessarily in those positions, we are called to be advocates for love, for advocates for peace, advocates for justice. Those letters that you write on legislation, those are ways in which you live out the covenant. Those feet that walk in parades and protests and rallies are ways in which we live out the covenant. But policies in our community is merely a reflection of the very people, the way in which the very people choose to live. If you want to break the stranglehold of the way that things were, to create a normal different than the way things once were, then we have to be committed ourselves to live in new ways. If we want to create a new economy here in Hawaii, it is not just up to the leaders of industry, not just up to the legislators to create the vehicles for that new economy. It is for us to also live into that new economy. If part of that economy is making sure that we are supporting local farmers, making sure that we are supporting local agriculture because it is good for the islands and it is good for the economy, then we need to shop locally. We need to shop. We need to call up Mark Hamamoto at Mohalo Farms and say, we want to be part of your CSA, your community supported agriculture market. If we can't, if Mark doesn't have enough food, we go to Oahu Fresh, Ka'ahumanu Farms, and many of the other CSAs that are out there to make sure that we are indeed fed, because that is how we live out a covenant. If we want to create a new green economy in which jobs are created by the ways that by creating jobs and renewable energy and energy conservation, then we need to be not only advocates for that, but we need to be driving less so that we can be conserving more. We need to be buying those small features, the different light bulbs and everything else that we need in our homes to bring down, to reduce our need for energy. We need to be doing all that we can so that we can then support the industries that will develop in all of it. If we are tired of all the noise that is out there in our community, all the arguing and everything else, we need to be ones who will shut down our social media periodically. We will be ones who will say, I don't need to be part of this arguing. We can instead increase our prayer time, increase our meditation time. We can take what Marita's brother Bob has invited us to do for the next 40 days, to be in meditation and prayer and light a candle and put it in our window and tell the neighborhood that we are indeed a people of love in this home. We can challenge ourselves to hear another story. Join with Val and myself and read My Grandmother's Hand by Mr. Rezma Menachem, and allow yourself to be challenged to look and feel where has that trauma resided within your own self. These are the ways that if we want to create a new story, instead of the way things used to be, to create the way things should be in this moment, these are the very practical ways that we live out that dream, live out that dream that the psalmist gave to us. And we join in that dream, we dare to dream and live those dreams. In 1945, Langston Hughes, right as the world was coming out of a conflagration in which the entire world was at war with one another, he wrote these words: "I dream a world where humans know others will scorn, where love will bless the earth and peace its paths adorn. I dream a world where all will know sweet freedom's way, where greed no longer saps the soul nor avarice blights our day. A world I dream where black or white, whatever race you be, will share the bounties of the earth and everyone is free. Where wretchedness will hang its head and joy like a pearl attends the needs of all humankind. Of such I dream my world." If that is the dream that we all harbor, a dream that is echoed throughout the Psalms, that is echoed throughout the scriptures, a dream where love is at the center of all that we do, if that is the dream of the world that we wish to see, not the world that used to be, but the world that we wish to see, then let us, in our daily lives, in our community's lives, be livers of that dream, tellers of that story. Amen.
Ho'onani kamai.